Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. I can't do my normal intro. A little under the weather, but we want to do a show because we've got some exciting things to talk about. As of Wednesday morning, USC made it official. Well, Cliff Kingsbury changed his Twitter handle to Cliff Kingsbury and put the Manhattan Beach Pier in his profile, put Fight On in his description. So Cliff Kingsbury and USC Trojans in there. So officially USC's quarterback coach and offensive coordinator. We want to have a special show today talking to my friend VF Castro. So she covered Texas Tech and covered Cliff Kingsbury. She's a former editor-in-chief of a blog that covered Texas Tech. So we wanted to talk to her about what she saw covering Cliff Kingsbury over the last several years. She's also a Big 12 writer for unafraidshow.com. So if you know our friend George Reister, I've been on his show before and he runs that. So she's doing stuff for him. You can follow her on Twitter at @thevfcastro. What's up? How are you? Thanks for coming on the show and sharing some insights about Cliff Kingsbury.
Thanks for having me. I mean, I think this is, like I was telling you in the pre-show, this is kind of my dream come true situation. Cliff is one of my favorite coaches of all time. I think he's an absolutely brilliant mind. And I grew up on USC. It was the very first sporting event I ever went to. It was a USC game. I think I was like 6 months old.
Wow.
So this to me is fun. I'm loving this.
Yeah, so I mean, people if they're not familiar with you, maybe give a quick background. Like you were a West Coast person, and now you're kind of all over the place. But maybe share kind of how you got here.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Southern California, Los Angeles, and Palm Desert. And I, like I said, I grew up on USC, and I ended up going to Nevada for college. And when I was at Nevada, I watched Nevada and Texas Tech play. Well, being in Nevada, being in the mountain, now it was a, I think it was the, I don't remember what conference it was at the time, but now it's the Mountain West. Watching Nevada, going from USC to Nevada, let's put it that way. It was a pretty significant jump in, you know, I guess, drop off in talent, I guess you could say. And then, you know, they started building their program up again. And then they competed against Texas Tech. You had Michael Crabtree versus Colin Kaepernick. That was the level of competition there. And so even then I was able to see just how dominant Texas Tech was, how exciting they were to watch. And so at that point I was like, well, hey, I like Texas Tech now. And then a year later ended up moving to Austin, Texas, and I just jumped into covering football. So that's kind of how it started. I'm still in Austin and school in Boston, which is weird, but I have another reason to go back home. I have another reason to go back to LA.
Yeah, this is really interesting.
That's the football story.
Yeah, and that's great. And so that's why we wanted to get your insights on, you know, from what you've seen over the years covering Cliff Kingsbury and Texas Tech, the Red Raiders. And for USC fans, and I'm sure you're pretty familiar with this because they were just down, you know, 5-7. And that you haven't seen something like that since 2000. People were talking about not renewing their season tickets. It's just the fan reaction, you know, Twitter on our message boards on USCFootball.com was so negative. And this at least is giving USC fans some life again. It's just an injection of adrenaline that they're like, wow, something cool is happening. We haven't seen USC do this for such a long time. So I think it's really important, but I don't know, what has your reaction been to seeing how USC was just like 10 days ago to what it's like right now?
Well, to contrast that, you had the same, only opposite reaction with that, or different reaction with Texas Tech fans. You had half the people who said, listen, this is a guy who just got the bearings on his coaching staff going 2 years ago, even though he's been a coach now for a couple of years. He just got the bearings going. He just got the foundation established. And so we need to give him more time and he needs another season with a healthy Alan Bowman. We'd be looking at a completely different season this year. Texas Tech probably would have been playing for the Big 12 championship, and which is insane to think that one player could have had that much of an impact. And it's unfortunate, but you did have a lot of Texas Tech fans at that point saying, I'm not renewing my season tickets. There was low energy in the stadiums. People just weren't excited about Texas Tech anymore. And I think that when you're an athletic director, that's a business decision. You have to make a decision that you think is going to be best for your program moving forward. And, you know, he's been able to do incredible things with the baseball program, with the basketball program, even women's basketball is having a moment right now. And so, you know, I think that was a time when Kirby Hoke had to make a choice, and he chose to end the relationship, or not the relationship, but the, you know, the contract with Kingsbury. And so, you know, at that moment, you started to realize just what a profound effect he had had throughout the nation, his contributions to football. And suddenly he goes from being somebody that half of Texas Tech fan base wants replaced to suddenly almost every program that's popping up with a head with a coaching vacancy is looking at Cliff Kingsbury. He becomes the hottest name overnight. And it really is kind of astounding that he ends up, you know, in LA, and suddenly we start hearing rumors of him popping up here and popping up there. And, you know, one person is saying he's going through the USC weight room. And you think about a program like USC that just lost to UCLA, and that's now led by Chip Kelly, who did incredible things at Oregon. I think what Lynn Swann said when he looked at Kingsbury and made a serious move at him was, we have to compete now with Chip Kelly. And we've seen what he's been able to do in the Pac-12. And we have to find someone who can do that and do it better. And in walks Cliff Kingsbury. And I think it was just the perfect timing. And I will say this, I think that one of the biggest reasons why Clay Helton was retained was because it really isn't a good head coaching market. You have a lot of the bigger names, the blue chip names that people want that are staying firm with their programs right now. And so I think that too was a business decision.
Yeah. I mean, I think some really good points there as far as how popular he was on the free agent market, you could say.
Yeah.
And still, you know, he was the head coach of a team that was 5-7 and he got fired. So, I mean, it was weird for me to see, because you know the great offensive mind he has. And when we made the initial report that it looked like they had a deal in principle, then there was like some backing off by his agent from, you know, let's reassume, but the real over the weekend interest from NFL teams, even to the point of someone saying he could become an NFL head coach. And that didn't sit. I don't know what you've heard about that, but like to go from Texas Tech 5-7 and being fired, I know Patrick Mahomes is great and Baker Mayfield and all that stuff. And it's a copycat league in the NFL. People want to try to mimic that success. I just didn't see that being like a realistic possibility. I'm not saying it can't be one down the road, but to go right from fired at Texas Tech to an NFL head coach, that just seemed like a stretch to me.
Right. And I think that, you know, there are two things here to take a look at. When you're a head coach, you don't necessarily, for an NFL team, you don't have to go to recruiting trips and fundraising trips and hold babies and shake hands and do that kind of thing. It's not a schmooze fest. When you're an NFL head coach, it's more of the business side. You get to focus more on drawing plays and just focusing on the business. And I think in that capacity, I think Cliff would have great success. But I don't think that success is now. I think that Cliff he's one of those, he's a genius. He's an offensive mastermind. And, you know, you saw how Patrick Mahomes was able to trickle that air raid into the NFL. And then suddenly you see it with the Rams this year and Sean McVay, and you see how it's starting to happen. But I still think that if you're to change the talent pool that is being sent to the NFL, it has to be done at the collegiate level. And if you're able to start inserting that into the Pac-12, make the Pac-12 one of those formidable forces again to compete against the SECs, then I think that's where you're going to have the most impact as an offensive mastermind like he is. I think that's how you really make that change and how you really do have that impact in the NFL.
Yeah, that to me was like there was a crossroads there. They had a path he could take. He could go NFL. He could go college. My gut was saying he was going to go college. Our sources were saying he was going to go college. Mm-hmm. But I could have seen him become an offensive coordinator in the NFL. Just the whole somewhat like would the Packers say, okay, you're going to be our head coach. Like, this didn't make much sense to me. Not that he can't be. Well, but and just, then that was a weird
time. Right. And then I think to myself, I'm like, okay, you just spent a couple of days in LA. You're at the beach. You're doing your thing. And then suddenly this coaching vacancy pops up in Green Bay. And I'm like, Green Bay, I heard it's lovely this time of year, but doesn't really seem like it suits a Kingsbury type. It just doesn't seem like it's his vibe. And so I think so much of it has to be the environment. And, you know, you see a guy like Kingsbury with his charisma, with his moxie, and you see LA written all over him. And I think that he's going to thrive in this situation. And, you know, I think that so much of the head coaching debate, you know, Jeff Darlington's tweets, a whole bunch of people's tweets popping up about NFL potential and this and that, I think a lot of that was also leverage. And I think that happens in a lot of cases where people start to put stuff out thinking that it's going to, you know, increase probability of this happening because this team is going to see this move and then they're going to want to negotiate more, you know, and that's an unfortunate side effect of coaching, but leverage deals end up happening all the time. And this could have been a byproduct of that. But, you know, I think in any event, you didn't see him popping up in places like Miami or other places that, you know, had a potential offensive coordinator job opening up. And all you were really seeing was movement happening in Los Angeles. And I think that was very telling on the move itself, because when you're that high priority, you know, they're going to find a way to get you to their campus. They're going to find a way to get you to their facility, to show you around, to kind of sell you on their program and their team. And when that movement isn't happening and you're not being seen on other campuses, then I think, you know, we can only go off what we're actually seeing happening.
Yeah, that's that's all we can go off of. So, but now it's
exactly. I mean, you can't read too heavily into that.
No. Well, that's official. So there was all the speculation, all that kind of stuff. But it's I think overall it's a really good move by USC, like we talked about before, and I've said this a million times. Like, that's just not been in USC's DNA to go out and get the biggest fish in the sea. We saw UCLA do that. I agree with you 100%. You kind of have to react to that. UCLA's tried to do the same sort of thing where bringing in people that we're familiar with and maybe not the biggest names and everything. And USC's done that forever. UCLA did with Chip Kelly, got the biggest name. And then USC's doing that with the offensive coordinator, getting the biggest name. I know a lot of USC fans would like to see that with a head coach, but obviously Lynn Swett had other plans. You got to make it work. You want to change a lot of things. And this is a big change. But I wanted to, you know, we'll talk about his history and stuff, but this past season at Texas Tech, you talked about a team that could potentially have, you know, represented, you know, played for the Big 12 championship. You know, this is a team that scored 6 points against a not real good Kansas State team. What do you think kind of went on this season? What, you know, why was that happening?
You know, it was really unfortunate because at the beginning of the season, there was obviously you had a little bit of quarterbacking carousel happening. You know, you had players, they compete differently against their teammates in practice and then they do when they're in actual live combat on the field. And so that's why I think there was it took a little while for them to settle into the quarterback situation. But I think that once you have an injury, once you have a quarterback that is starting to break records and not just break them, shattering them at a very high pace, and then that player goes injured or gets injured in a big game to, you know, I think that was to open up conference play. You have to realize that quarterback is starting for a reason. And we started to understand why that was happening. And so when you have that level of quarterback carousel happening, it does start to affect the offense. You know, you're used to one quarterback leading and then you have second, third, fourth, potentially fourth string quarterback by the end of the season. Injuries are going to start to happen because players are starting to rotate in, rotate out. They're trying to find an equation that actually puts points on the board. And so when your offense can't put points on the board the way they were used to putting points on the board to start the season, then your defense has to come in and play more. And your defense can only do so much. And the Texas Tech defense was very durable. And I will absolutely attribute that to the former Texas Tech strength and conditioning staff. But you can only do so much when your offense can't put points up. And when you're an offense like Texas Tech and you're used to putting up points, that it's just, that is going to be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. No, seem to just, you know, same sort of record, right? 5-7, 5-7. And sort of derail things. But okay, so we're going to move on from that. But I wanted to, I guess people hear Air Raid and they're thinking Mike Leach and never running the football. And I wanted to get your thoughts on what his offense is, because it is a team that, you know, that runs the football. We've seen some, you know, running back a couple years ago go for 1,400 yards. I mean, what do you, how would you describe that for a USC fan that doesn't really know what Cliff Kingsbury offensive philosophy is? Well, how would you kind of describe it?
I think that Texas Tech, obviously you have that, you have that mentality where you have to, the air raid is truly, I think, the core of what the Big 12 is. And when you have teams like Oklahoma and even Texas at some capacity, you know, to be able to run the ball and be able to throw those defenses off balance, that's how you control the clock. That's how you control the game. And that's how you get in your opponent's heads, really, when you're able to impose will in the air and on the ground. And so with Texas Tech, unfortunately, they tried getting it done on the ground. And there were a lot of players. You've had Trey King, Dalian Ward. You've had players that have been able to get some yardage on the ground. But, you know, unfortunately, when your offensive line is having rotation injuries, they're getting hurt. They're having their problems. It makes it really difficult to run the ball the way you want to. And I think that, again, like, injuries this season for Texas Tech were, like I said, they started to mount up, and they started to mount up, I think, because they were having to overcompensate for quarterbacking issues. And so I think for Cliff Kingsbury going into USC, you have the availability of that 4- or 5-star talent. There is no excuses as to why you can't have guys like Alabama ready to go. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference with Kingsbury's jump from Texas Tech to USC, is that that's a destination school. People want to go to USC. Not that they didn't want to go to Texas Tech, but, you know, if you're recruited to Texas Tech or USC, you're going to probably pick USC, especially right. if you have a mastermind like Kingsbury. So, I mean, you know, case in point, who's that quarterback that just, he was committed to Texas Tech.
Oh, he's got the really cool name.
Yeah, MacIver, Maverick MacIver.
Yeah.
So he reopened his recruitment when Cliff Kingsbury was fired. And so he was being recruited by USC. And I think that's very telling. So if you have a quarterback like him who has the opportunity, hey, I'm committed to Texas Tech, but my guy just went to USC, I think I'm going to reopen this and see what happens. And so, you know, I think that if you want any margin of how effective Kingsbury already has been, then there it is.
Yeah. You mentioned the talent, and that's what, I guess it's the most common thing that people talk about. Like, hey, Chip Kelly at Oregon was amazing. What if he was in LA and he had, you know, 5 stars in his backyard instead of recruiting guys from Texas or wherever, trying to get, you know, anyone he could get in there? What's he going to do at UCLA? So that's what you want to see. We're going to, you know, watch UCLA for the next couple of years, and you'll get your answer. And the same sort of thing with like a Cliff Kingsbury, like, hey, he's going to go to a team that has a 5-star quarterback and 4-star quarterbacks backing him up and 5-star receivers, like, already, just you walk in there and the personnel he has, like, what could that offense be with that? Like, what are your kind of thoughts on that when you talk about system and then having, you know, a different level of or caliber of players?
Well, I mean, prime example, even USC in a down year, they still produced the number 2 wide receiver in the country in Antoine Wesley. And I think Cliff has been able to do this year after year with walk-ons, with 2-3-star talent. He has consistently been able to produce a top 15 offense in the country with this. Imagine the possibilities if he has blue chip recruits from the Los Angeles area, if they're able to go in and start recruiting Texas, Florida. Imagine the possibilities with what he's been able to do with an offense that, you know, Lubbock is a tough city to recruit to. Call it what you want to call it, especially the first couple of years that he was at Texas Tech. They didn't have the indoor facility. They didn't have the infrastructure that they've had. They redid their weight room. They redid the football field. They've added tons of new different things to the actual stadium. And all of this change was happening during his career at Texas Tech. USC has this built in already, even though they're doing renovations to the Coliseum right now. They already have these mechanisms in place. So he doesn't have to go out and have to overcompensate for recruiting. It's there. It's built in. So he has this this talent available to him now that he never had before.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing is, though, like, even like we look at Mike Leach, like Luke Falk, you know, mm-hmm. sets all these records. He was a former walk-on. Then right. you're wondering, like, but, you know, it's still like you could say with Texas Tech, if you look at the commit list and stuff, everyone's like three-star guys. But there's a mm-hmm. development factor, too. I think Texas Tech has put more wide receivers in the NFL than anybody, or has more in the NFL than anybody right now, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's what's curious. Like, well, what if you start with a five-star guy? Will they be as effective as someone who's kind of learning and adapting themselves to the system if they're set in their ways? Or I don't know what do you think about that?
I think so much of the reason Texas Tech has been able to have the success that they've had with their players is because those guys come in gritty. Most of the time, those players were just overlooked at so many different phases in their development. They felt like they were underrated. They weren't paid enough attention to because of the high school they went to, or the fact that they didn't go to state, or whatever the issues were. Those players came in with a chip. They came in gritty. They came in wanting to fight for their respect. And I think that is the one thing that Texas Tech, it is very, very blue collar in that regard, where you don't go to Lubbock thinking you're Hollywood. You go into Lubbock with this incredible work ethic that you're going to get things done. You're going to get your name out there because this is the place that you go to make that happen. And so I think that's why, you know, Cliff especially, he isn't going to accept that attitude either. On the other side of the spectrum, you know, if a player comes in there and says, I'm set in my ways, I'm good, I know what I'm doing, I've got this, he's not going to accept that. He is going to try and retrain your mentality to make you like those Texas Tech players who have that chip, who have that belief that they were overlooked. And that's what makes a player better, not going in there thinking that you are the best.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And that's the big thing. Like, hey, what are you going to do with a five-star guy? We know what you can do with a walk-on or a three-star guy and stuff. These dudes, and you know, we've seen a lot of guys from Texas Tech go into the league, you know, the Michael Crabtrees or Danny Amendolas, and obviously the quarterbacks, which we got to talk about quarterbacks because, I mean, that's it's amazing. The weirdest thing to me is when people talk about this, you know, his time. So he was an offensive coordinator at Houston, Texas A&M, and then, you know, goes to Texas Tech in 2013. But to have a guy like Baker Mayfield on your team and you decide to bench him and he ends up going to another school and winning the Heisman because you have Patrick Mahomes, like maybe kind of talk about how that happened because that just seems crazy to me.
God. You know, he, as I recall, he got injured. Like it happens in a lot of situations, you know, you can have a set of really good quarterbacks who are trying to compete for that QB1 spot. Player gets injured, whether it's an ankle, whether it's something very simple, you throw another guy in there. And I really feel like that was the perfect storm for Kingsbury. He had Davis Webb, he had Baker Mayfield, and on the team at the same time. And Webb went in there and Webb started playing phenomenally. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like you usually go with the hot hand. And so I think I have a theory on this because, you know, you put yourself in the eyes of a player. For them, this also is a business decision. And Baker Mayfield, he went to Lake Travis High School. They're used to winning. They're used to development. They're used to certain sets of just things that they do. And so if he grew up an Oklahoma fan, if he really wanted to go to Oklahoma right away, he could have walked on at Oklahoma. Yeah. Why did Mayfield choose to walk on at Texas Tech? Because Cliff Kingsbury had just produced the youngest Heisman winner in history in Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
And so why wouldn't you want to go to Texas Tech and learn from somebody who just did that? That's pretty incredible. And so I truly believe that Baker wanted to go to Texas Tech to learn from Cliff. And he had no intentions, I think, on staying at Texas Tech. I think that he walked on again at Oklahoma. Again, that was a decision for him. There was a scholarship waiting for him at Texas Tech. It just, it wasn't it was the timing when it, all started happening.
Yeah.
The scholarship, I think, was offered for spring, and the situation became more inflated than it had to be. But like I said, when you're a walk-on as a freshman and you have a team that you've been following your whole life, that you want to go to that team, why not go to that team? Why have a stop along the way? Because you want to learn from somebody.
Yeah. So he had Baker Mayfield. Oh yeah. So it was Davis Webb that really took his job, and then Mahomes took it. Well, no, I guess Mahomes got it later in that same year too. That was all the same. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what was happening, as I recall, Davis Webb started getting very pick prone. I think he threw 13 interceptions in the 2014 season.
Yeah.
And he still threw for over 2,500 yards. He still had an incredible, 25 maybe touchdowns that year. But Patrick Mahomes, I think that was the biggest reason why he was, why Mahomes took over. And what Mahomes did was absolutely incredible. I know in 2016, he threw for over 5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns, I think. He had an absolutely incredible year. And so then there was, in 2016, Patrick Mahomes, it was during the Kansas game, he slid and he got injured. And then Nick Chmielewski came in. Of course, it was a Kansas team, but still, it was exciting to watch Nick Chmielewski come in there and show what he could do and finish the game out. And obviously, Texas Tech won. But I think that gave people a vote of confidence for Nick Chmielewski going into the next season. And, you know, then Nick Chmielewski was able to go in during the last game of the season against Texas, score a touchdown, and Texas Tech won. And people think that it bought Cliff Kingsbury another year. But Cliff has notoriously been able to produce talent. I think it's just the durability of the talent. And I think that's where the strength and conditioning staff has come in. And so, you know, I think that's the foundation of it.
Yeah, it's funny. So you look at his, like the quarterbacks that he's coached, like Case Keenum, like, dude, he's in the NFL. Johnny Manziel, yeah. You know, won the Heisman, was, you know, briefly in the NFL. Davis Webb, same thing. He ended up, transferred to Cal? And
graduate transfer.
Yeah.
And then it was drafted by the Giants.
Yeah. And then obviously Patrick Mahomes is likely going to be the NFL MVP this year. So
yeah,
it's, you know, Baker Mayfield, you know, won the Heisman Trophy, who he benched. It's just like, it's kind of crazy just looking at
didn't bench him. He was injured.
Okay. Whatever. I just say he's benched him. But I mean, he could have brought him back, and he did, you know, he got Wally Pipped, I guess, or whatever. But
yeah. I mean, like I said, you go with a hot hand.
Yeah.
Like any coach would do.
So it's pretty impressive resume there. But I wanted to talk about some of the other positions as well, because, you know, we mentioned the wide receivers, that, you know, a lot of guys going into the league taking, you know, 2-3-star guys or walk-on guys and making them successful. But, I mean, there was a tight end that caught like over 100 passes. We've, like I mentioned, a running back that went over 1,400 yards. I mean, he's made some other positions. It's not just, you know, quarterback throwing to receivers all day. There's other factors involved.
Yeah, there are a lot of other factors involved, but I think with Cliff, Tech doesn't really go with tight ends. I think a lot of their receivers, they rely so heavily on inside and outside receivers that they kind of act as a hybrid. And so, you know, when you have that many receivers on the field at any given moment who can do damage, like I said, on the inside or the outside, you know, I think that that's where you want to put the bulk of your recruiting, is that in the offensive line. So, you know, quarterbacks are going to come regardless. So I think that that's always been kind of a question for people. They kind of ask, well, why doesn't Texas Tech have more tight ends? I think that's the only answer that I can provide. But, you know, I think one of the biggest things that people talk about, though, in terms of other positions with Texas Tech, why they weren't able to get things done, was on their defense and special teams. And, you know, the special teams last year, I will say, they took a lot of the steam out of the Texas Tech team last year, because, you know, you go up, you march down the field, you have to kick a field goal, your kicker's injured, you keep missing, it just becomes an epidemic at the time, and people think that your kicker is out for the rest of the year. Or that they're never going to rebound. And they're like, wow, we've gone from worse to progressively worse, if that's even possible. And so I think that's always been a big issue. And they finally got it together. Texas Tech special teams finally got it together last year. Texas Tech's defense, like I said, finally got it together last year. And I think that, unfortunately, is what the Cliff Kingsbury era is going to be known for. How come they were able to produce such prolific offenses, but it took their defense so long to try and catch up? Yeah. And so, you know, it's just, like I said, I think it's a series of very unfortunate events. And again, I have another theory behind that was, you know, a lot of coaches, when they come in, they have lots of experience. They've been in the business for several years. They, you know, they're late 30s into their 50s. They've built their coaching network. They have their people, and they have their people they can call. And with Cliff, you know, he got into coaching because of parking tickets at Texas Tech. When he was done playing football, he figured, well, I should probably just get my master's and do something there. And he contacted Texas Tech to have his transcripts, and they wouldn't release his transcripts because he owed over $1,000 or something in parking tickets. And so he said, well, what's my next option? So that's how he got into coaching. And it was just the most random thing. And so he didn't have aspirations when he was a child saying, I want to be a college football coach. This just happened. And so, you know, when you're the youngest head coach hired, you don't have that much of that big of a network. And so he brought in some of his friends and he tried making things work. And throughout, you know, a couple of years, he finally was able to build up a tree. He was finally able to build up confidence in assistant coaches to go to Texas Tech to, you know, give up what they had at their previous posts and join what he was trying to build because they believed in him. And it does take a coach a while to build that. And I think that's another factor when people want to talk about development and his player development and how his win-loss record just doesn't stack up to the amount of talent that he had on his teams. That's a big reason why.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously he's not going to have to worry about special teams or running the defense. I mean, he's brought in obviously to run the offense, which, you know, he can do a really good, you know, he can do a really good job there. I mean, what do you feel about that? Like focusing, you know, you were running everything. He's going to be working for a coach that a lot of the fans wanted fired, you know, like not really wanted around anymore. You know, people talk about him as potentially being a coach in waiting. Like, what do you think about the whole situation of him like backing away, only doing the offense, and then what his role is going to be under Clay Helton?
I don't think his routine is going to change any. And I think for him, that routine is what makes his identity. And so that routine is he's always the first one at the facility. He's always the last one to leave. He doesn't like doing anything that puts his program or team in a negative light. He doesn't like to be the news ever. You hardly ever hear anything that he does outside of football. And so that's strictly by design. And I don't think that's going to change. And I think that because that's not going to change, he is still going to have that same dialed in work ethic. He's still going to be able to go in there every day. He's probably going to want to work with the defense. He's going to want to work with different positions. He's going to want to work with different coaches on how we can best do this and how we can best do that. He's probably just going to be popping in and out of meetings all day just because that's how he feels like you develop an offense is by understanding what defenses are doing. And, you know, he wants to find holes in his own systems and his own plays. And he gets to focus on the offense, but I think that a leader is a leader. And I think he's just a natural born leader, which is why so many people follow with what he wants to do. And I think it's going to be kind of a shock, I guess, for Helton in a way, because I think that he knows he's under the gun. He knows that this is kind of a make or break year for him. And a lot of people said that could it have been possible that Helton hired his executioner? I mean, nobody really knows, but I think that with what happened with USC and Ed Orgeron, I mean, they don't have a track record of hiring an intern. So say something happens, devastating happens next year. And, Cliff is promoted to interim or something happens. You know, that's again, doomsday scenario, but USC just doesn't have that track record either. So I don't think that Helton is necessarily worried about that happening, but I do think that Helton is going to have to understand that Cliff is very meticulous. He likes being a part of meetings. He likes knowing what's going on and he likes working with other coaches to try and figure out solutions.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. People talk about that. I'm like, well, the problem is if Cliff Kingsbury comes in and does what you expect him to do and USC scoring more than 30 points a game instead of 26 or whatever they were before, well, you're probably winning a lot of games and then you're probably not firing Clay Helton. And And if he's not, I mean, I guess the offense would have to be really good, but the rest of the team still stink and you're losing games, but you're scoring a lot of points. Then they might just say, well, we're going to turn it over to Cliff Kingsbury. But to me, the scenario is hard to picture how that would happen, because if he's really successful, that would make Clay Helton more successful. So you probably wouldn't be getting rid of him.
Well, this gives Helton an opportunity to focus on other things, defense, special teams, recruiting, schmoozing, doing that kind of stuff. This gives him that opportunity to just say, all right, our offense is in really good hands. Whatever Cliff says is probably what we're going to do, because he knows what he's doing. And, you know, like people say, you're scoring points. You're putting people in seats. You're selling tickets. You're doing the mechanism is working the way it's supposed to be working to create the test for, you know, for what makes a team successful. And so, I think Helton, if he can just, he needs to focus on head coaching stuff and just let Cliff run the offense the way he knows how to run his offense. And I think that there is going to be synergy. Cliff is a very easy guy to get along with. He's super, he's very, like I said, he's very easygoing. He's very chill. There isn't a lot of drama. There's no fuss. Like I said, he puts the team first in absolutely every single thing that he does in his life. And that kind of personality is I think what USC needs right now. And like I said, he's used to coaching up these guys that come in with chips. He's used to telling them, you know, when they come in, you weren't recruited. You were a walk-on. You recruited by maybe one or two D1 schools. It's going to take that same mindset when these players come in that, hey, we understand that you were blue chips. We appreciate you. Your talent is there. You have the talent to be successful, especially at the next level. But, you know, you have to understand that we're going to break you. And once that happens, you're going to be able to be retrained in this sort of offense that is going to help you become the best player that you can be.
A couple more things, we'll let you go. The assistant coaches, I want to talk about that, and then we'll talk about strength and conditioning afterwards. But the assistant coaches, USC has an opening, we're assuming, for running backs. Probably not going to have a tight end coach, but they had a tight end coach that would likely move over to wide receivers and Kyree Colbert. They have an offensive line coach, Tim Drevno, who was an offensive line coach before, but he's doing running backs and doing both. He's going to take over the quarterback spot. So there's some spots he would need to fill, but there's not, who knows if he's going to replace a couple of the coaches that USC already has. What would you say about the offensive assistants he has, and if are any of them staying on at Texas Tech, or are they free agents too? Do you think he would bring them with them? What do you think about the assistant coaching situation?
I know that every coach at Texas Tech was let go.
Okay.
I think the only person that remains at Texas Tech is the equipment people. So
cleaned house. Yeah.
They're a cleaning house completely. So in terms of Texas Tech, you know, they really, I think, improved under Kevin Johns, who was our offensive coordinator in the first season. Cliff might consider him.
He was the offensive coordinator. Was it Brandon Jones that was the offensive line coach?
The offensive line coach, and he was a former Red Raider. He graduated in 2006.
Okay.
So I think that's definitely a possibility. If it's open, he could tab him. I think, like I said, one of the biggest issues for Texas Tech last year was injuries. It wasn't necessarily coaching. It was just, you know, things happened throughout the season that, you know, and Texas Tech, their offensive line was supposed to be one of their top positions last year. And so, unfortunately, like I said, injuries, things were happening. And so they had to reshuffle. I think he could potentially come back. Clay McGuire was the running backs coach, Emmett Jones, outside receivers coach. I think there are potential people that, if possible, Cliff could bring because he has those relationships with, but I think that if you are Kingsbury, you're looking at Emmett Jones. You're looking at that outside receivers coach because you saw what he was able to do with the Antoine Wesleys. And I think that he became probably one of the premier free agent coaches just because what people were able to see him do, especially in a down year.
Okay.
So he was in his third season with Texas Tech. And so I think that if USC wanted to give him a shot, that he's definitely probably the guy to bring in.
Yeah, I think USC wanted to get obviously the big name first, and then we'll see. You know, I'm sure a lot of that's been talked about or negotiated or whatever. So we'll see if there's any more announcements coming in the next couple of days. But we haven't heard anything on the USC strength and conditioning side. But a lot of people keep asking me, like, are they going to run practices different? And I know we talked off air, and you were a big fan of the strength and conditioning coaches that Cliff Kingsbury had at Texas Tech, and they're no longer there either. So, I mean, we don't know, but that, yeah. I mean, if USC is making a change on that front, I mean, that would be one of the possibilities, I guess.
If USC decides to make a change at strength coach, I know they're not, at least on the outset, in the market to make that change. But if they were, I truly believe that Rusty Witt, who is the Texas Tech strength coach, is probably the best name in the game right now, who currently does not have a job, who should have a job. I thought that at least Texas Tech would negotiate with a new head coach to retain the strength and conditioning staff because they were that good. It's hard for me to understand why this staff was not retained. So that's why I think that, you know, Coach Witt, he's a former Army Green Beret. He had a career as a strength and conditioning coach, and then he left during 9/11 or after 9/11 to enlist in the Army because he just felt like that was a calling, that was something he needed to do. And when he got out, he restarted his coaching career, and he's been able to take so much of that mindset, that mentality, that military experience, and retrain his players, retrain their mindset to be stronger, to be more durable. And that, you know, it really is a mind over matter situation. So for him, so much of the coaching philosophy is the mindset and how it affects your physical conditioning and reaction. And so that really is sort of a multi-phase training philosophy. And I think that that is pretty needed. I think when you're at USC right now, there's so many errors that are made because of mental mistakes, because of just things that, you know, they're so easy to not do, but, you know, you wonder why they beat themselves so many times. And you wonder how a guy like Coach Witt could come in and change that philosophy.
Yeah, that's going to fire up USC fans. They want to see a more physical team. But, you know, obviously that kind of starts from the top. And I'm no strength. I always say this, I'm no strength and conditioning expert. But when you talk about VF, by the way, if you follow her on Twitter, she's a workout fiend. So she's working all the time. But if you want to change the culture, that's the biggest part of it, because the strength coaches are with the players more than the regular coaches, the other coaches. So the football coaches. So that's why I would think, I mean, I don't know if Ivan Lewis is the best of the world. That's not my expertise, and you don't really get to see them doing all that work because it's all behind the scenes. But if you want to change the culture, I do think that's probably area number one you would look for. And when the athletic director is coming out and saying that, you would think that would be a possibility.
Right. Well, I think that if this is going to be a possibility, that, like I said, that is the name that USC needs to jump on, because I think, you know, this guy is a Texas born and bred guy. He is no BS. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. He's the type of person who, you know, you take a bunch of Southern California kids, and he is going to put that fortitude, that endurance, that mindset that is really going to take these athletes really far in life. And I'm not saying that USC's current strength coach isn't equipped to do that, but I'm saying that I think once you have someone who has experienced what Coach Witt has experienced in the military and seen how he's been able to apply that to his job, to his career, it's a pretty interesting mechanism he has in place. And I think once you understand it, you understand why the players liked this staff so much.
VF Castro, follow her on Twitter at the VF Castro. And you can read her stuff covering the Big 12 on unafraidshow.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate the insight on Cliff Kingsbury. And we're looking forward to maybe talking down the road. Get your thoughts, if you know, as you watch the USC offense and see, like, hey, what's going on, you know?
Yeah, I'm really excited. Like I said, this doesn't happen. So this, I mean, coaching is a very big pool, and especially the coaching staff, potential is a very big pool. And so, like I said, I was not expecting this to happen when he became a free agent, but hey, I'm happy. I'm happy he's at USC.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
All right. That was pretty cool. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that and get some insight into someone that's been covering Cliff Kingsbury for the last several years. Lots of cool nuggets in there. Hope you enjoyed it. Going to answer some of your questions that came in. We got voicemails, we got emails and stuff. So I'll try to do all of that. Let's see. Here's the first voicemail for you.
Yes. I'm a concerned fan, reporting on your upcoming year and all your changes on the coaching staff. I want to tell you, I've been a USC fan for years, and I've been an athlete for years. I've been coach and also a scout. And I'll tell you one thing for sure. Keep McClay Helm, and he's a good guy, don't get me wrong, but he's not the fit for USC. Now, Clancy Pendergrass is not the fit for USC also. Think about it for a second. Would Nick Saban have these two gentlemen on his staff? And how long do you think that lasts by what the results are? That's your answer right there. You can end it right there. That's how your upcoming season is going to be. And so on. My name is Jim. Take care. Have a good day. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
Thanks, Jim. So with Nick Saban, Nick Saban probably wouldn't have hired Clay Helton, but you know, he would have hired Cliff Kingsbury. So I know what you're saying. USC's hiring practices have not been to the level that you would look at a program with USC's prestige, for sure. We talked about with VF there, what UCLA was able to do and bring in a Chip Kelly. That's outside of their normal realm of what they would do. And maybe that forces USC to step up. And the next time they have to hire a head coach, would they hire someone that's not in demand again? I don't know. I think you would kind of have to get someone that is in demand, like Cliff Kingsbury is or was, now that he's at USC. So I think that's a great move there. How much does it fix everything? I don't think so, but it fixes a lot. And I think it's certainly a step in the right direction. I think the ship has sailed now. I mean, Clay Helton is retained. So people, I think we did this when he was hired. Like, yep, I mean, it was probably not the right decision. Didn't feel it was the right decision then. Go forward, he had a really good couple years. And then obviously a horrible year this past year. 2019 will be very telling with the schedule we talked about in the last show. It's very, very tough. So it's a tough schedule. And you know, you're going to have to come out of the gate playing well. And will they be able to do that with Cliff Kingsbury running the offense? We'll see. I think they're going to score a lot more points. Before we jump into any more, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been great to us over the last couple of years, and it's awesome to be able to work with them. It's a product, it's a store that I love to go to myself, and my wife and I go to all the time. We have one that's fairly new in Hermosa Beach that we enjoy, but there's also the one just off the USC campus at the University Village that's awesome. And whenever I give took friends that were in from out of town for a little of a tour around campus for my reunion, the 25th reunion, and you know, that's the first place we go, and they're amazed. Like, wait, people live in the dorms? Students live in the dorms above a Trader Joe's? You can just come down and get a snack? And yeah, it's pretty awesome. So thanks to Trader Joe's for helping us out over the years. They've been great, and I look forward to keep working with them. Go to a email question. This is from Joan Lewis. So this is about the schedule that came out. Why is Notre Dame game so early on the schedule? Hasn't it traditionally been much later in the season? And Joan, so the agreement with Notre Dame, it's been doing this for many years. If it's a Los Angeles game, if the game's in Los Angeles, they do play it in November, late November. If it's in South Bend, to try to avoid some of the bad weather, they play it in October. So they move it up when it's in South Bend, and then when it's in LA, it's the end of the season. So that's what they've traditionally done. The weird part about this schedule is with you get three out of conference games, and they had scheduled a BYU game, three games actually with BYU. They signed that back in 2013. But one of them is going to be away, and it happens to be in 2019. So you're talking about two out of conference away games in the same year, which, you know, not ideal. It's at least in a year when they play Notre Dame away, it's when they get five home games in the conference schedule. So it's not like they're playing four home conference games. So it does help with that a little bit. But typically you try to get seven home games in that year. And this year you're only going to get six because you're playing BYU and Notre Dame on the road. We got Lloyd. Said last year the offense and defense seemed to take their time to line up. So they took time lining up. The Kingsbury offense, you need to move. He said move pretty. I think he means pretty fast. The team reflected Helton's personality. They never were in a hurry. How do you think it's going to work to get up to jet speed with Kingsbury? So he said, well, didn't really word this right. He said jet speed Kingsbury and donkey speed Helton. Okay, so I think the offensive philosophy will be Kingsbury's. He's going to have control over it. It's, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit before. The air raid, I think he's running the air raid. I mean, he's running his offense, but he's always adapted his offenses to the personnel that he has. And if you look at the way their run pass ratios, it's not like they just throw the ball 80% of the time. That's not what he does. It's closer. It's not 50%, but they run the ball a lot more. They always have prolific passers. They spread the ball out to a lot of different receivers. He's had a great tight end. I think it was an inherited tight end, but they're mostly H-backs. They're like slot guys. So there's not like a traditional tight end on the team. But, you know, if you have a guy like Josh Follow, he would line up in the slot and throw it to him. But I think they're going to run at the tempo that Kingsbury wants the offense to run. So I think you might see some additional changes in practice because you're going to let him do what he wants. There's not going to be, running whatever, you know, trying to do what you do now. That just wouldn't make any sense. So you bring in a guy like that, he's going to run his system. I think practices will be impacted by that as well, Lloyd. So whatever you liked or didn't like about Clay Helton's offense, I don't think you're going to have to worry about if, you know, him being involved in that. This is going to be, you don't hire Cliff Kingsbury to do something. You don't hire, like, you don't, if you bring in, if you're running a restaurant and you hire like the best French chef out there, and then you bring him or her in and say, okay, well, I want you to cook American cuisine, that doesn't make any sense. Why did you hire that person? You could have brought someone else in to run your current system. So that's not what the point here is. We'll get, you know, when they have the press conference, we'll get to ask a bunch of those kind of questions. But that's just my take on it, Lloyd. Mark says, why are you so enthusiastic about Kingsbury? Where has he won in a big program against a big program? Well, I mean, when he was the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech, they beat this program called Alabama. So that's pretty good. He was at Texas A&M. Hopefully I didn't say Texas Tech. When he was at Texas A&M, him and Johnny Manziel, that's what they did. He won the Heisman. So that's pretty cool. Just look at the results on offense. And we talked about, yeah, the teams, maybe they struggled on special teams. Maybe they weren't good on defense. The offenses were always good. So that his rankings, so total offense, I'm looking through when he was at Houston, 2 years, they were 11th in total offense in the country and then first in the country, 600 yards a game. At Texas A&M, they were third in the offense, in the country in offense. At Texas Tech, they were 8th, 10th, 2nd, 1st. The worst, they were 16th in 2017 and then 12th in the country. And so that's 2017 is when they lost Patrick Mahomes. But Patrick Mahomes threw for 5,052 yards, 41 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions in 2016. I mean, that's ridiculous. So that's why people would be excited about this, I guess you would say, because he's coming in to run the offense. And there's one thing you know, he runs the offense really, really well. All right, here's another voicemail.
Jeremiah from Snake Lake. Boy, I feel like a yo-yo on a string. back and forth, side to side. Cliff coming. Cliff ain't coming. Cliff's coming. Cliff ain't coming. My question's for RA, Double S, and at Keely is my name. What the hell is going on, y'all? Can we get an answer or not? I'll take my answer off the air.
Jeremiah, we got an answer. But I wanted your voice. It was always funny, so I wanted to play it. But yes, the answer is done. And we talked about it about a week or so ago, and we still felt pretty confident that this was going to happen. And there were some looking around in the NFL like we talked about, but USC, it's all official now. He signed, sealed, and delivered, and this adds a lot of excitement. So sorry you had to wait a little bit, but it's over now. Here's another voicemail.
Hi, Ryan. This question can be asked of anyone. Daniel out of Los Angeles. Maybe you can play this if Cliff Kingsbury or if he's hired or not. But let me be quick. So everyone's worried about this air raid offense. My question is, Kingsbury is obviously a great, talented offensive mind. So I don't see why people would be worried about him running an air raid. Honestly, do you guys think he would even run an air raid? I don't think he would run an air raid offense at USC. People have to realize that Texas Tech does not have the talent or skill that USC offense has. So he run those air raids at Texas Tech are used to, supplement the lack of talent that they have there, so they can, overcompensate what they don't have and play well. So at USC, I don't know if it's me. I would see him running more of a Kyle Shanahan style of offense. I mean, all three of his running backs did have 300 yards. Now, with the type of running backs that he has at USC, he could possibly have all those guys maybe close to 1,000 yards, or maybe at least one of them. I'm just to see him. I say Kyle Shanahan because he had that stellar offense, and now that he's with the 49ers, they came in and, with Garoppolo and these other quarterbacks, you have unknown name guys like, Matt Breida and stuff like that, almost rushing for 1,000 yards in, these tight ends. So he would definitely utilize USC's wide receivers and tight ends that have not been utilized under the previous regimes, which USC has some very talented tight ends and running backs, so he can really do a lot with this system. And I don't think he would run an air raid with USC because he would have no reason to, but he would definitely create a dynamic style of offense. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I don't think he's not coming in here to not run the air raid. That's what he's going to run. It's going to be the air raid. But if you look at what his air raids have been, they're adaptable. They've changed. They're not. Yes, there's different kind of talent he would have at Texas Tech. If he has a really good running back, I think it was 2000, I forget what year it was, but they had a running back that was over 1,400 yards. And a quarterback that threw for over 4,000. Like you can have some sort of balance there. And I think with, you got Stephen Carr and Vi Malapai and Marquise Stepp, I think, it's not like they're going to abandon the run and just throw the ball every time. They will run the football. I think you're going to see a lot of, three, four wide receiver sets. It's going to be the air raid. That's what he does. But you can do things a little bit differently depending on the personnel. So that's what we all want to see. I think you're going to see a much more defined offense, much more crisp moving forward, much more productive, much more efficient. Efficiency. That's what these. What you see him do, that's what these offenses bring. And you're going to see these quarterbacks do that. I really think it's going to be positive, but don't think he's going to come in here and start running a different offense. It's going to be the main concepts are going to be what you see in the air raid, but it'll look more like, watch what Texas Tech does. It's not the same thing as what Mike Leach is doing at Washington State. So I think, if there's a year where he doesn't feel like he has good running backs, then they might just throw it all over the field. But at USC, you're going to get those guys. It's not like, oh, you got some three-star that he's developing really well and you have to make a star out of him. Like, you're going to have the talent there at those skill positions, and it'll be fun to watch how he kind of utilizes that. We got a text question. Hey, Keely and Ryan, Jason from Sometimes Japan. What are your opinions on Tim Drevno if he stays as the offensive line coach? And if we get a new offensive coordinator like Cliff Kingsbury, that's happened, obviously, would he want his own entire offensive staff? Thanks and fight on. Keely, your hair and makeup is on point these days, almost as good as your epic analysis. Oh, well, that's nice, Jason. You didn't say anything about my hair and makeup. I don't wear makeup, but so this is just me, obviously. So Keely will not, she'll probably listen, but She's not going to be able to react to it. I would say my gut is there's a pretty good chance he's going to bring in a lot of his people or people he wants. So I'm curious what happens with Keira Colbert, who, you know, you need usually two receiver positions inside receiver, outside receivers. That's going to be a different shift. There's not going to be a tight end coach. There'll be two receivers coaches. And you see this with teams that run similar systems. That's what they do. Will, you know, Colbert be retained as one of them? Or does Tim Drevno get retained even though he's not coached offensive linemen in an air raid type of system? I kind of feel like if he brings in a Brandon Jones who worked he was at Cal before under Sonny Dykes, he's got some Pac-12 experience. My guess would be that's where they go, because you do want someone who's familiar with this system. Now, maybe that was something that was negotiated. We'll see, but we should know pretty soon. But my gut is that kind of sticks around, Jason. I mean, he's going to bring in his own guys is my gut feeling there. We got Dustin. This may be more of an economics question than a football question, but when Dave Aranda was mentioned as a possibility, I noticed the post saying that his salary would go much further in Louisiana than Los Angeles. If that's a legitimate concern of potential assistance, does USC try to explain why it's really not as big of a factor as it's made out to be? Thanks from Dustin. Okay, so Dave Aranda is the LSU defensive coordinator. He's got a 10-year deal. A 4-year deal worth $10 million, $2.5 million per year, the highest paid assistant in the country. And we had heard some rumblings that USC was interested, and that kind of fell through. But obviously an expensive coach that just to, you know, I don't know 100% if that was the interest. That's what we had heard. But yeah, that's another good sign if you're even looking at somebody like that. I don't think it was going to happen, but at least if you're going to try to do something like that, I think that's a really big deal. But he's making $2.5 million in Louisiana. I would have to pull out the calculator, but I'm guessing to be the equivalent for cost of living, he would probably make $3.5 to $4 million in Los Angeles. That's how much the cost of living adjustment is. Now, when you're talking about you make $2.5 million, you could be very comfortable in Los Angeles. I think there's coaches though that are making, or like maybe support staff people, say someone's making like $75,000 a year. That does no, you know, if he was doing that in Louisiana, that would be a huge difference from making $75,000 a year in Los Angeles. And you're trying to live somewhere near campus, you might have a longer commute. There's I think that would be the bigger factor if you're talking about a support staff than someone that's already making millions per year. I think he'd be fine. He could live wherever he wanted, most likely, making whatever, if something similar to that. I do know that they made a run at him at Texas A&M when Jimbo Fisher came in. That started I think that's how he got the $2.5 million a year deal. So, I think a good sign, first of all, that, what we had heard about potentially going after Dave Aranda, I think that's a good sign. And I don't think the cost of living factor is that big of a deal when you're talking about those big salaries. It's some of the smaller salaries that do. And, you know, you're obviously just like any business. If you're a company based in Los Angeles and there's one, say, in Austin, which is a great city, cheaper cost of living, but, you know, it's more expensive now, but it's still a lot cheaper than L.A., you're selling different factors of L.A. Like, well, obviously, if it's USC, you're talking about coaching at USC, the talent you have available. You don't have – what's the biggest selling point for Dave Aranda? You don't play Alabama. Like, you're not – Alabama's not in your division. You are going to dominate your division if you're good in the Pac-12, and you're the most dominant program on the West Coast, where in LSU, where you rank in just the SEC – in your division even. So there's a lot of selling points, the beach and, you know, that's what you do when it's more expensive to live for a reason, and you have to sell the reasons why it's more expensive. You know, the reasons that make it more expensive to live, that's the reasons you're selling it on. So you're paying, you're going to pay more, your money's not going to go as far, but you get all these other benefits. So just almost like any other business, or, if you're recruiting for a different business, I think you'd use the same factors. But like I said, the guy making $2.5 million a year, not as big of a deal. His mansion won't be as big or whatever, but if you wanted to like buy, like basically if you were in Louisiana and you wanted to outright buy a house, almost anything, you could probably just, you know, you could buy it with your yearly salary. But you could go to, you know, Manhattan Beach and go, I want to live on the Strand, and it's like a $10 million place. Like, okay, now that's much less affordable than the most expensive thing you're going to find in Louisiana. So yeah, there's factors like that, but I think it all comes out in the wash. If you're talking about making that much money, I think you'll be fine. All right, last one. We got Don. What is the incentive for a very good coach? I'm sorry. So Don's written in a lot. Not so positive on the Clay Helton vibes. I'll just give you that. He said, what's the incentive for a very good coordinator to work under Clay Helton unless he thinks he can become the head coach? Do you believe Helton would let an offensive coordinator take total charge of the offense? And would any prospective coordinator believe that he could prepare an offense with so little quality practice time? Okay, so I think there was real concern that, yeah, if Clay Helton's a lame duck head coach, what coordinators would want to come in? I think it really did have to be a good situation for them. And this is a perfect one for a Cliff Kingsbury. It's perfect for USC. That just happened to work out. It's going to be a no-lose situation for Kingsbury because he's coming in and taking over a dysfunctional offense. And it's hard to imagine it not working with the talent he has. So he's going to look like a genius coming in, a 5-win team that was 90th in scoring in the country. And they're going to, if they go into the top 10, it's like, okay, that's amazing. You know, that's a huge turnaround. So it looks good for him. And will Helton let him take control of the offense? A guy like Kingsbury, I think it's an easier decision. But yeah, if it was somebody that didn't have the same sort of resume as a Cliff Kingsbury, would they want him to kind of adapt what they're doing and change things and stuff? That I think that would have been a real concern, but I don't think it is. When you make this big of a splash, like I said before, there's just no reason not to. But I think it just kind of worked out. I'm not saying, I mean, you got to give USC a lot of credit for trying to get a guy like that because you wouldn't even think they would try in years past. But it did work out. I mean, timing for all this worked out. It couldn't have really been a better situation for USC, and you got to give them credit by taking advantage of it. And then, so would any prospective coordinator believe that he could prepare an offense with so little quality practice time? Don, I think they're going to change the way they practice. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's running his offense. He's going to practice a certain way to get the results that he wants. So I don't think he's going to be handcuffed as far as practices go. And I think the big factor here is you have a voice in the room now who's seen it other places, who's done it different ways and has been successful. So it's someone that can say, well, here's the reason why we want to go. If say there's, he used to do 2 days of full pads a week. He's now going to have a voice in the room saying, here's why we would want to do that. Now it's going to be Clay Helton's decision for something like that. But I feel like he's going to be able to run his practices with his offense the way he wants to do it. I think it's only going to have a positive impact and a positive effect. I'm not saying he can change everything, but I think there'll be enough change where it's not like he's going to be handcuffed and not be able to do what he needs to do in practice. And that might spill over to other aspects of practice. Maybe they do, maybe they're more physical. Maybe it's more intense. Maybe the tempo's higher, all that kind of stuff. I think it's all good. Don't picture Cliff Kingsbury coming in and going, just working inside the current system. Like you bring in a guy like that, you're trying to change the culture and the scheme and the discipline and the personnel and the staff and all that stuff that Lynn Swann said, you have to let a guy come in there and make his changes. And I think he will. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. I'm going to a little over an hour. Thanks to VF Castro for coming on and sharing, some insights on the inside behind Cliff Kingsbury when she was covering him for the last several years. And thanks to Trader Joe's, our sponsor. Thanks to the people that sent in the questions. There's still some leftover questions I'm going to send to Dan Weber that he can answer in a column. If you listen to our show, we didn't have Harvey Hyde on this week, so we'll get him back next week. And then we did a regular podcast with Dan Weber, but it was kind of on the fly because of all the news. So we didn't get to as many questions for that either. So we'll be able to put something together, a column for him to answer those a little bit later on the week. But I hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.